The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt. The day after, the morning after a contentious State of the Union speech, I'll be going through that speech. Boy, it's kind of embarrassing when the President of the United States gets laughed at. Now, you expect the jeering. I mean, he didn't have Speaker McCarthy tearing up the speech behind Joe Biden, but she did have just outright jeering, and Marjorie Taylor Greene called him out on his lie about Medicare and Social Security, because the Republicans are not cutting Medicare or Social Security. It's just a lie. And the worst part, though, the low point, was cut number 26.
The production. And when I talk to a couple of them, they say, well, we're afraid you're going to shut down all the oil wells and all the oil refineries anyway, so why should we invest in them? I said, we're going to need oil for at least another decade, and that's going to exceed and beyond that.
You know, if I could have, there's a meme here, Kevin McCarthy, Speaker McCarthy, if you're watching on the Salem News Channel, and I hope you watched the show on the Salem News Channel last night, we've got to cut that and turn that look into a meme. Play it one more time. Cut 26 if you're watching. Kevin McCarthy turns his head, kind of looks at people and nods and says, yeah, I'm behind Grandpa.
The production. And when I talk to a couple of them, they say, we're afraid you're going to shut down all the oil wells and all the oil refineries anyway, so why should we invest in them? I said, we're going to need oil for at least another decade, and that's going to exceed.
Kevin McCarthy just goes, another decade. We're going to need oil for another 500 years, Americans. Just figure it out. We're going to make it in a way that doesn't injure the environment anyway. We're going to recapture the CO2. Look, this guy is not Mr. Technology or Mr. Innovation, and he just read it. At some points, as he got tired, it got worse. Cut number 27.
Make no mistake. If you try anything to raise the cost of producing jobs, I will veto it.
Okay. Does anyone know what he said? I know what he said because I read the transcript, but let's listen again. TikTok, Jeopardy time. What does the President of the United States say? Cut 27.
Make no mistake. If you try anything to raise the cost of precision jobs, I will veto it.
I thought for a while he said if he raised the cost on precision missiles, he will veto it. But it's apparently he raised the cost of prescription drugs. One more. The first lady was in the audience, as is typical, with heroes, as is typical. Ronald Reagan started that. Joe Biden gives her a shout-out, as is typical. But usually you don't have to embroider what it is that the first lady is doing. Cut number 29.
God's work. These plans are fully paid for, and we can afford to do them. Restoring the dignity of work means making education an affordable ticket to the middle class. You know, when we made public education, 12 years of it universal in the last century, we made the best educated, best paid, we became the best educated, best paid nation in the world. But the rest of the world's caught up. It's caught up. Jill, my wife, who teaches full time, has an expression. I hope I get it right, kid. Any nation that out-educates us is going to out-compete us.
Okay, Jill Biden looked fabulous last night, by the way. She did not have an expression on when the president lied and said, my wife, the first lady, teaches full time. She doesn't. 2 days a week, maybe. And we're not too sure about the 2 days a week. Look, Sarah Huckabee Sanders killed it in the response. I'll get to that later, but let me begin with this. The biggest headlines around the world is the anguish of Turkey and Syria. The death toll has passed by this point 10,000 people, and they're just getting started. They have got logistical hurdles, the likes of which we've never dealt with before. President Erdogan has been to the earthquake zone. They sent tens of thousands of soldiers, but they've got to move so slowly because the rubble moves, it will crush survivors. A decade of civil war, of course, in Syria left no infrastructure to recover anything. And more than 250,000 people in Turkey are in need of food, clothing, and housing. That's at minimum 60,000 buildings collapsed. So that's what you get when you multiply 4 times 60,000. And there's no food. There's no electricity. There's nothing. So our friends at Food for the Poor have worked around the clock for 48 hours to redirect all their resources. Lots of Christians, by the way, in Turkey. So there are lots of partners to work with. And Food for the Poor is redirecting everything to that effort. And I put up a banner at HughHewitt.com. And I would encourage you to go over and visit HughHewitt.com. Be as generous as you can. This may be, according to the Wall Street Journal this morning, actually it's the Washington Post, the worst natural disaster and consequences of our lifetime. It, because of how it occurred 11 miles below the surface. Everything is made of brick. It's got no rebar in it. It all fell down. There are people trapped, tens of thousands of people trapped. No way to get serious, just a write-off. I mean, you can get food maybe over to the Turkey border, but you're not going to get the good guys to take the food into Syria absent armed convoys in Turkey. Story in the Wall Street Journal. As the sun went down Tuesday over Gurney Street, and this is from Balantek, Turkey, dozens of people, their hands and arms limbed with ghostly gray dust, silently combed the wreckage of flattened apartment blocks. Ismail Parlak and his wife dug through the rubble looking to find Mr. Parlak's mother entombed, they said, somewhere under six stories of collapsed concrete and contorted metal. Next door, Fatima Komart hunted in the remains of her home for belongings of her two sons. Hour earlier, she had found the two boys, 11-year-old Ahmet and 17-year-old Abdullah, dead, cradling one another in the wreckage. The brothers grabbed each other as the building came down. Numb with shock and grief, the residents of Belen and other cities, towns, and villages across southern Turkey were contending with freezing temperatures, power outages, as they sought to find the missing and keep themselves alive in the aftermath of two powerful earthquakes that struck Monday. As I said, more than 10,000 people are dead. Hundreds of thousands are displaced. Tens of thousands are missing. They don't have any hope for them, but they do have hope because every few minutes in the search area, it's daylight there now in Turkey and Syria, they call for a halt to all movement so they can hear tapping, et cetera. The cell phone batteries are dying out. So it's really not a great situation. California knows how to deal with earthquakes, and we keep our electricity on. And the California exploration team has landed in Turkey now. The Israeli team is there. They've already rescued four people. There are a number of different specialized groups around the world. There are two in the United States. I think one is in New York City and the other one is in L.A. that have a half dozen trained dogs to sniff only for live people. They look for cadavers later, different group of people. They know how to move the concrete, but what they can't bring with them is enough food, water, blankets, and essentials, hygiene, personal stuff. That's all Food for the Poor. That's what Food for the Poor does better than anyone. So during the break, Fetching Mrs. Hewitt and I talked last night. We were driving back from the Nixon Library. I interviewed former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo after the State of the Union last night for an hour in front of about, I would guess, 800 people about his book, Never Give an Inch, the very surprising bestseller, which is going to stay on the list because people just love this book. And we had a lot of great substantive conversation, but I got to listen to the replay of State of the Union as well this morning. And I'm telling you, it was so contentious and off-putting. Focus instead on the fact that our common humanity calls us to assist Food for the Poor doing what we can't do. You may have been moved by these images. They will continue for weeks because it's not the collapse of a condo in Florida. I was talking last night about how the collapse in the condo in Florida a year ago was a tragedy, and we fixated on it, and we wondered about what would happen to all the other condos along the shore in Florida or in California. And, of course, Californians know earthquake very well, and I lived there long enough from 1989 to 2016 that I know what the aftermath is like getting a normal done. So I really applaud Food for the Poor. Now, Food for the Poor is the best, most respected, most reliable, lowest overhead, all-around greatest thing you could possibly contribute to for disaster relief abroad. At home, I might use a local church that I knew like we did after Katrina, but I don't know any local churches in Turkey. I know Food for the Poor, and I know that they deliver on what they promise to do, and they get it done. So the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt and I will send $1,000 in this morning. I wish you will give as much as you can, as quick as you can, to get the supply chain moving. We'll keep you posted as the updates begin to come in. They spent most of the 48 hours. Food for the Poor does not sit around. They go right to work and they figure out, where do we help? How do we get the food, the water, the pre-ready meals, the blankets, the sanitation material. How do we get it to Turkey? And they've got that pathway figured out. They got it all figured out. And they have a banner over at the top of HughHewitt.com. My friend Tom Tratip worked around the clock for the last couple of days with them to get the Help Turkey and Syria banner posted, get this organized. Any amount that you can send will speed relief to people who are cold, grieving, lost, injured, still being rescued in Turkey. We have our political difference here in the United States. Let's set those aside and help the friends in our NATO ally. No matter what their faith tradition, Muslim, Christian, Jewish, there are lots of them in Turkey. Let's help them via HughHewitt.com. Come right back, America. Welcome back, America, on this Wednesday, February the 7th in the year of our Lord, February the 8th in the year of our Lord, 2023. During the break, it's a five-minute break for news, traffic, and sports. And during the break, I used my credit card to make the donation that the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt and I resolved on last night to Food for the Poor, to assist the people of Turkey. I don't know how anyone watches these videos and doesn't think, you know, Turks fought by our side in Vietnam and Korea and in World War II. We were opposite them in World War I. They are NATO allies. They were instrumental in the Cold War. We have our differences with them. They've repaired relations with Israel, which is a good thing because they've got the best in the world Israeli search team there looking for survivors. And it's freezing. It's freezing as people dig for their loved ones because the window closes after 72 hours. Some people say 96. And there will be babies pulled from that wreckage this week. I'm sure there are. But it's very easy to give online. It's very safe, very secure. In years of working, I called up Tom Tratip immediately and said, Tom, are you on it? And he said, yeah, I'm already doing this. And we always turn to Food for the Poor for an international disaster rescue effort at Salem. We believe in redemptive radio. We believe in doing radio that actually matters to people and tries very, very hard to be good stewards of their generosity. They have the most generous audience in America. I know Mike Gallagher says he does, but my audience is just incredibly generous. And they're very, very, very generous when epic. And this is an epic disaster. It's probably the worst natural disaster in terms of loss of life of my 66 years. So please head over to HughHewitt.com. The Help Turkey and Syria red banner is at the very top. I want to play for you Marco Rubio, who went on to Fox with Sean Hannity last night and gave a discussion of the president's State of the Union, which I think sums up the reaction of most of us who have seen or heard or read about it, because it was just a bizarre night. Cut number 40.
Yeah, it was a bizarre speech all the way around. I mean, there's a lot of bizarre lines tonight. One of them had to do with China, where he said, name me one world leader. He actually screamed into the camera, name me one world leader that would trade places with President Xi. Basically, any dictator on the planet would love to be the president for life of the second largest economy in the world and a rapidly growing military that can fly balloons over the continental United States and have nothing happen to them. And it's that joins a list of a lot of bizarre things tonight. Look, tonight he recognized Paul Pelosi. Horrible attack. No one was in favor of it. Completely ignores the fact that sitting right in front of them is Brett Kavanaugh, where an assassin was arrested within steps of Brett Kavanaugh's door. Completely ignored that. You know, he attacked Big Pharma, smeared them up and down. I'm not always a big fan of Big Pharma. But then he takes credit and brags about a vaccine that they made billions on because he fired people unless they used their vaccine. He went after Big Oil. All this profits, you should be reinvesting your profits before I, Joe Biden, put you out of business over the next 10 years. I mean, the litany of ridiculousness, it was just really bizarre statement. But let me tell you what you didn't hear about tonight. And I thought that Governor Huckabee touched on that in her rebuttal and her responses. You didn't hear a lot of talk about pregnant men tonight. You didn't hear a lot of talk about some of these crazy things because they're pivoting now to an election mode and they know all that stuff is toxic. So they're trying to pretend it's not happening, but it remains at the core and at the heart of their administration. Not a lot of woke talk tonight, except for the climate stuff, which, by the way, he doesn't tell you, benefits China, who make the batteries, who now dominate the solar panel industry and the like, and who continue to build more coal-fired plants in all the other countries of the world combined. So it was a bizarre speech with a lot of silly not lines and some really ridiculous ones. Perhaps the craziest of all is threatening he's going to veto any national abortion ban passed by Chuck Schumer's Democratic Senate. And he screams it so you can see how strong
he was screaming a lot last night. The president does not hear well. He does not speak well. He does not communicate well. He is an old, old man. And, you know, last night, not apropos of Joe Biden, I asked Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State, was in Yorba Linda, California. I interviewed him about his book, Never Give an Inch. about the world leaders that he has dealt with, Putin and Xi and Kim Jong-un, their energy level. And in the back of my mind was, they're all watching this guy tonight, this guy being the president, stumble, mumble, rumble, disparage, annoy, generally divide, and run for re-election. And they're thinking to themselves, we hope he wins. They want this guy around because there's nothing to fear there. Donald Trump released a response video after the speech, cut number 39.
Here's the real State of the Union. Over the past 2 years under Biden, millions and millions of illegal aliens from 160 different countries have stormed across our southern border. Drug cartels are now raking in billions of dollars from smuggling poison to kill our people and to kill our children. Savage killers, rapists, and violent criminals are being released from jail.
So you get the idea. The president was not happy, and maybe a little bit later I'll play that in the after show. I will definitely play the Mike Pompeo interview in the Grand Old Pod. You know, I don't think people are singing Come Together songs after the divisive speech by President Biden last night. It's clearly, as Matt Continetti noted this morning, the launch of his reelection campaign, with all the lines we're going to hear again and again and again. And they're always going to be not true. Some of them are going to be flat out lies. Some of them are going to be silly, like we need oil for at least 10 more years, so build an oil factory. I mean, that's just so dumb. But you also saw dawn of a new national political figure. You already knew Sarah Huckabee Sanders from the time that now Governor Sanders was the press secretary for President Trump. I've had the great honor of traveling with Brian and Sarah. Consider them friends. They're fabulous. It was a great choice. We gave two responses. Juan Ciscomani, newly elected congressman from Tucson, delivered his response in Spanish. And I'll talk to Juan next hour. But let's go to Sarah Huckabee Sanders before I do. Many of you have already given. Thank you for being up early and going right away. You've wanted to do something for Turkey and Syria. You've seen the horrible misery. You know that which you do for the least of these, you do in my name. And get your contribution in early. The more they can surge, the better, because it's these critical, my gosh, the next 2 months in Syria and in Turkey, there's not going to be any food, electricity, water. It's freezing. There's war in Syria. There are collapsed buildings everywhere. They're going to be desperate. The grief. It's just an awful situation, the pictures of which are as devastating as any natural disaster. It's not 9/11 shocking, but it's pretty close. 60,000 buildings fell down. 60,000 buildings. Didn't have the chimneys collapse, or like when we have an earthquake in California, all the drugstores always have their cameras show all the drugs are on the floor. This is not that. This is something I've never seen before, and I'm thankful that Food for the Poor is there. Now, many of you are new listeners to the show. I have new affiliates. Food for the Poor has been around, I think, 75 years. Begun by a couple of Catholic priests in Central America, now worldwide in its reach. Very efficient in the delivery of food and blankets and aid and shelter and aid workers. Very careful with their accounting. Extraordinarily, extraordinarily trustworthy, which is why I allow them to sponsor natural disaster relief efforts, because the American people are the most generous people in the history of generosity. We just are. Mostly that's because we are a Christian nation, not in fact, but in population. So we're a secular state. We're a constitution state. I wrote my Washington Post column about it. It's on the front page of the Washington Post today. Negative comments are piling up about the rule of law and why we are a non-establishmentarian state. But those of us who are Christians and Jews, and those of us who are worshiping at mosques, etc., we all share basic humanity, and we all see suffering, and we all want to respond. And you can, whether it's $10 or $10,000, you can do it at the banner at the top of HughHewitt.com. Thank you in advance. Those people really need you to step up, and it will be known. It will be remembered.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Here is Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders, cut number 30. She begins the post-State of the Union response by the Republicans, cut number 30.
Beyond our border from Afghanistan to Ukraine, from North Korea to Iran, President Biden's weakness puts our nation and the world at risk. And the president's refusal to stand up to China, our most formidable adversary, is dangerous and unacceptable. President Biden is unwilling to defend our border, defend our skies, and defend our people. He is simply unfit to serve as commander-in-chief. And while you reap the consequences of their failures, the Biden administration seems more interested in woke fantasies than the hard reality Americans face every day.
I think she's home run with that line, and she continues on that. Cut number 31 on Huckabee Sanders. Cut 31.
You reap the consequences of their failures. The Biden administration seems more interested in woke fantasies than the hard reality Americans face every day. Most Americans simply want to live their lives in freedom and peace. But we are under attack in a left-wing culture war we didn't start and never wanted to fight. Every day we are told we must partake in their rituals, salute their flags, and worship their false idols, all while big government colludes with big tech to strip away the most American thing there is, your freedom of speech. That's not normal. It's crazy.
That's not normal. It's crazy. So much of that can be said about Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Has a good speechwriter. She's also a very fine writer herself. And boy, does she know media. She chose the blurred backlit lighting. She chose to be seated. She chose to be paced. It's a very powerful presentation. Cut number 32.
Republicans believe in an America where strong families thrive in safe communities, where jobs are abundant and paychecks are rising, where the freedom our veterans shed their blood to defend is the birthright of every man, woman, and child.
Then cut number 33.
In the radical left's America, Washington taxes you and lights your hard-earned money on fire. But you get crushed with high gas prices, empty grocery shelves, and our children are taught to hate one another on account of their race, but not to love one another or our great country.
She's right, and people have noticed. Cut number 34, please. More Sarah Sanders.
Most Americans simply want to live their lives in freedom and peace. But we are under attack in a left-wing culture war we didn't start and never wanted to fight. Every day we are told we must partake in their rituals, salute their flags, and worship their false idols, all while big government colludes with big tech to strip away the most American thing there is, your freedom of speech.
So we played that one already, but it was worth hearing a second time. Let's go to cut number 35 on how the president has served you.
Good evening. I'm Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Being a mom to three young children taught me not to believe every story I hear. So forgive me for not believing much of anything I heard tonight from President Biden. From out of control inflation and violent crime to the dangerous border crisis and threat from China, Biden and the Democrats have failed you. They know it, and you know it. And it's time for a change.
Now, the last cut from Governor Sanders is the one I want you to hear, because I hadn't really thought about her as a formidable choice for vice president. But last night, I'm talking to Mike Pompeo, who's running against former President Trump, who's running against Ron DeSantis, who's running against Chris Sununu, who's running against Glenn Youngkin, and running against Greg Abbott, and running against Nikki Haley. And I thought to myself, here we've got a vice presidential candidate. You know, I think Tim Scott's probably going to be the vice presidential candidate, but Sarah Huckabee Sanders knows how to deliver the goods. Wind up cut number 36.
I'll be the first to admit, President Biden and I don't have a lot in common. I'm for freedom he's for government control. At 40, I'm the youngest governor in the country. And at 80, he's the oldest president in American history. I'm the first woman to lead my state. And he's the first man to surrender his presidency to a woke mob that can't even tell you what a woman is.
That's just such a good line. She's going to be a fine, fine governor. And she promised online last night that they will adopt the Arizona model of backpack funding, where the funds follow the school very, very quickly in Arkansas. But the funds follow the student to any school they want. Let me get that right. Meanwhile, over on CNN, Nancy Pelosi got out of the freezer and gave a couple of responses to the State of the Union. They're not connected to reality, but I just thought you had a chuckle out of this. Cut number 37.
He made it clear we have much more to get done. We didn't finish our job, but we really went down the path in a way that demonstrated that he's a president with great judgment. Sometimes that judgment comes with age.
Sometimes judgment comes with age. Really, that's how they're going to cover up that fiasco. Cut number 38, Nancy Pelosi.
Joe Biden is a person of vision, knowledge, judgment, strategic thinking to get the job done. He was a remarkable 2 years, a remarkable 2 years, and again, connects very empathetically with the American people.
If you believe that, you know, if you believe that, I can't help you. If you think it's been a remarkable 2 years, the collapse in Afghanistan, from that to the Chinese balloon, to $5 trillion in debt, to roaring inflation, shrinking budgets, to just a genuine conflict over crazy stuff like safe trans zones for library readings for kids and gender reselection surgery for 11-year-olds. If you think it's been a wonderful 2 years, good for you. Ron DeSantis yesterday talked about media. The only thing that Joe Biden's got going for him is legacy media. Now, he has got that going for him. But people like DeSantis have figured out they and the president are both the subject of the next campaign. Cut number 3.
We've seen over the last generation corporate media outlets, legacy media outlets, increasingly divorce themselves from the truth and instead try to elevate preferred narratives and partisan activism over reporting the facts. When they depart from the truth, a lot of times the truth's on the cutting room floor, and the narratives that they're supporting and furthering actually damage a lot of people with lies. And so we have a number of people here who are well-versed, either personally or professionally, in the area of defamation law. And at the end of the day, what I think they fought for is to hold these big media companies accountable for their actionable lies. And, you know, it's one thing to say what you want and truth, and that's fine. And the truth isn't always comfortable. But when you're knowingly putting out false information, and indeed, I'd say these companies are probably the leading purveyors of disinformation in our entire society right now. There needs to be an ability for people to defend themselves.
There does. And he went on and said this about the corporate media, and I think it's so on point. Cut number 4.
The swan song has been this Russia collusion hoax, because they indulged in that for 2 years, and it was almost all based on anonymous sources. I mean, it all eventually was debunked, and even in real time, people were saying this, but they just kept cycling in this, and I think it just raises the question, you know, this obsession with these anonymous sources, where did that come from? It used to be rare that you would do it. I mean, to assassinate someone's character with anonymous sources would have been a total no-no. Now it's just kind of like a normal and actually the preferred method of being able to deliver content.
You know, I talked about that last night, the Russia story with former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo at the Nixon Foundation. And I'm going to play that interview on the Grand Old Pod today, but we spent a lot of time talking about the Columbia Journalism Review and the Russia hoax, and Ron DeSantis is right. That is the standard that has been set by the left-wing legacy media. It's not a standard Republicans should even bother trying fighting. We should just speak the truth. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. I read during the break, the death toll has passed 11,000 in Turkey. They lost their goalkeeper on their Turkish national team. We'll hear more stories of that the next few days. The Taliban in Afghanistan announced, I'm not making this up, they're going to send $165,000 in disaster relief. That's just money they stole from somebody. This audience will send $165,000 this week. In 10s and 20s and 50s and 100s, and a few of you will make $1,000 gifts, and some of you will give more. There's only one way to do that. That's at the top of HughHewitt.com. I'm not surprised Food for the Poor reacted as quickly as they did. Tom Tradip was on the phone with him immediately. He's our vice president of communications with the not-for-profit world that sponsor campaigns. We have to approve. We have to have confidence in them. Tom did the vetting and the checking and worked with them on getting the banner. Help Turkey and Syria banner is up. It's the worst since Haiti, and it's probably worse than Haiti. We could get stuff to Haiti pretty quickly. This is 90 miles from Florida. Getting stuff to Turkey. It's a NATO country, thank goodness. So we got an Air Force base there. So we're going to be able to fly stuff in. But all of it depends on the generosity of individuals, not governments. Governments will give big stuff. They'll give tractors and trailers and refrigeration units for the dead. They will give what they can. But food, water, blankets, comfort, aid, sanitary materials, hygiene, just basic clothing. That's food for the poor. They do it better than anyone in the world. That's why I exclusively support them in international relief work, because Food for the Poor gets it there. It's not because I'm Catholic. They started out Catholic. They're non-denominational Christian, and they serve all the poor everywhere, and they especially are on the scene of disasters like this. Please be generous. Let me check a market report brought to you by Birch Gold, our friends at Birch Gold, longtime sponsors of the show. And I have them as a sponsor of the show for the same reason I have Food for the Poor as a sponsor of the show. I only appeal for you to consider people that I trust. I buy my gold from Birch Gold at HughGold.com, and they sponsor the market report in the first 2 hours of the show. Yesterday, the Dow was up 285. The S&P was up 52. The NASDAQ was up 226. Overseas this morning, despite the terrible disaster in Turkey, England, Germany, and France are all in green territory. The 10-year Treasury is up at 3.674. Talking last night to a hotelier, building has begun again on hotels and units. That's great. That means time to get back into the market. Mortgage interest rates are probably below 6% for many of you for the first time in 6 months. Take advantage of that. Call Andrew and Todd.com at 888-888-1172. But buy gold if you want to open up an IRA or a 401k. You buy gold from HughGold.com. HughGold.com. Text my name, Hugh, to 98-98-98.
You're going to shut down all the oil wells and all the oil refineries anyway, so why should we invest in them? I said, we're going to need oil for at least another decade, and that's going to exceed and beyond that. We're going to need it.
You know, you hear a lot of things at a State of the Union. You rarely hear derision. And the president got derision last night, joined now by United States Senator Tom Cotton from the great state of Arkansas, who got the word last night that he's going to have to teach his two young boys to drive because we're still going to need oil in 10 years. So, Senator Cotton, I'm sure you were counting on teaching them in electric vehicles, and that's all they would ever drive. But the president broke the bad news last night. We're going to need oil in 10 years.
You are, given how reckless those boys on their two wheels right now, I'm not sure they're going to be getting behind four wheels later in life. It was pretty remarkable to hear the president admit that we need oil and gas for, oh, just 10 years, Hugh. But at, in 2033, we can switch it all off. I'm sure that all the people out there thinking about investing and drilling or production or refineries that can run into the billions of dollars and have a multi-decade payoff period are now just chomping at the bit to go out and put their own money or their clients' money at risk, thinking that the Democrats in 2033 are going to shut them all down, as they've been threatening to do all along. This is one reason why we're facing a growing energy crisis in this country, is the Democrats are trying to strangle off investment in and growth of the oil and gas sector. But the truth of the matter is we're going to rely on the oil and gas forever, Hugh. There's almost certainly never going to be a time when we don't need oil and gas, not just to do things like power our vehicles, but to make clothes and plastics and other things that are based on petroleum.
It's really the dumbest thing he said last night among many dumb things. But, Senator, let's come back to that. I want to talk about your colleague in government, the new superstar of stage, screen, and television, Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Boy, did she kill it in the response last night.
She did. Sarah did an outstanding job. She's off to a great start in her first month as governor. Our legislature is passing many important bills with many more to come. And I thought she had a very well-framed line that increasingly the choice in our politics is not between right and left, but between normal and crazy. There are a lot of folks in Arkansas who are historic Democrats who may even feel some sympathies towards their old Democratic party, but they realize that today's Democratic Party, especially in Washington, D.C., led by Joe Biden, is just pushing crazed left-wing ideologies on a country that just wants to lead a normal life, to,
now, Senator, living, you,
to raise their kids and worship their God.
You have been to a number of these. Your time in the House, your seventh year in the Senate, you've been to a number of State of the Unions. I don't think I've heard one as off the rails as this. And, of course, our left-wing friends in legacy media are saying, boy, look good. And Nancy Pelosi said, with age comes wisdom. But, in fact, it's embarrassing. And national security threats. I was with your old friend, Mike Pompeo, last night. I think you two are going to be slightly competitive when it comes to book sales, your book being Only the Strong and his book Tough, Never Give an Inch. And I think he may have sold more than you in the first week. But we were talking about you behind your back and whether or not you will brave the cold of the Army-Navy game up in Massachusetts next year. But what is the deal about the lack of seriousness in his speech after Secretary Pompeo said last night, the Chinese just transited our most secure parts without interdiction and covered in a bodyguard of lies about what happened for a week? Why wouldn't the president at least talk about it last night?
Well, first off, Mike's new book, Never Give an Inch, is great. It's a deserved bestseller. I hope all your listeners have gotten a copy to read it. It's an inside account of what happened in the Trump administration from someone who was there from beginning to end, and also a very sober look at the face, unlike President Biden's State of the Union address.
You know, yes.
I was watching the clock in the chamber, and I think we passed an hour before he even mentioned China or Russia and Iran at all. It's almost like they put the speech to bed Sunday afternoon at Camp David and celebrated over some ice cream. And then someone said, hey, Mr. President, we forgot to say anything about the threats our nation faces. So they tacked on 2 minutes of perfunctory comments at the end. Joe Biden ended up spending more time on baggage fees than he did the Chinese communists, probably the gravest threat our nation has ever faced to our way of life. I suspect that's in part because he didn't want to highlight a humiliating moment for America when a spy balloon last week became a trial balloon, testing Joe Biden's strength and resolution, and obviously he came up lacking. I can assure your listeners, by the way, having gotten more information about the circumstance, that we could have easily shot this balloon down over the Aleutians. It was not much more than directing a pilot with the command fire. That Joe Biden's indecision and his fearfulness of ever doing anything that would offend China, as you saw again last night, when he talked about them as if they were like a high school basketball rival, a competitor, not a mortal threat to our way of life, allowed him or caused him to allow this balloon to float on its merry way all across the middle of the country.
Appeasers are going to appease Senator Cotton. Now, one of the things Secretary Pompeo said last night is he is disgusted. I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the transcript in front of me. He's disgusted by people saying, oh, they've got spy satellites that can see everything anyway, so no big deal. He said it's a 3-bus size array of electronic equipment, the likes of which we have no idea what was in there. It could have been weaponized, could have had anything in it. And making light of it is exactly the wrong response. You agree or disagree with him, Mom?
No, you should not make light of it. I know I've heard several people dismiss it as a 300 or 400 year old battlefield technology, but there are plenty of reasons why a nation would like to use a balloon in this fashion. So first off, it just stands to reason to you, anyone with, you don't even need an engineering background to understand that you have better resolution on images and better fidelity on electronic collection at 11 miles than you do at 200 miles. Just common sense.
Senator, do we know if they dropped anything along the way? I'm just wondering if they had little mini parachutes, little mini collection devices. Did we keep it 24/7, eyes on?
Not to my knowledge, Hugh. But again, you raise a good point. It's fine for the intelligence agencies and the Department of Defense to say, we don't think this gave any capability beyond their satellites, but we don't really know until we can collect all the debris and hopefully put together exactly what was that balloon was carrying. We don't really know what it had. But, even Hugh, if you assume that it had cameras and other equipment that gave no added capabilities what their satellites have, there's still sound reasons for a nation to do something like this. China believes that we will target their satellites as they will target our satellites in the early stages of any potential conflict. Therefore, these balloons, if fully tested and rolled out for them, will provide a significant redundant and resilient capability to provide exactly what their satellites otherwise provide. So there are a lot of reasons for China to have done this, sound reasons of statecraft. And for Joe Biden or anyone else to make light of it or just assume it's no big deal, it's very risky.
You know, I think he's got the worst speech writing staff in the history of the modern White House, because this line, they just did not anticipate how this line would go over. The fentanyl devastation is because the border is open and the Sinaloa cartel using precursor chemicals from Mexico is flooding the country with fentanyl. The president uses the wrong number and he gets some pushback and he seems surprised. Cut number 19.
Fentanyl is killing more than 70,000 Americans a year. Big, you got it.
It's your fault. Now, if the president was nimble, he would say something like, the failure at the border is generational and we have to do something about it. But fentanyl is a bipartisan problem. He didn't. He was confused and he smiled. Senator Cotton, there's no getting away from this. He's trying to preempt criticism of the border by talking about it. Will that work in your view?
No, Hugh, I don't think it will. And the fact that we're losing over 100,000 Americans a year to drug deaths just highlights how dangerous our border is. As I've said before to your audience, you should ask yourself what you would do, what you think our government should do, more to the point, if ISIS or Al-Qaeda set up shop in Juarez or Monterrey or Tijuana and was killing over 100,000 Americans a year. And that's exactly what we should do to these cartels. Yet Joe Biden refuses to protect our borders, which is the most basic kind of national security, border security is. Also, I got to say that the Democratic Party's relentless leniency towards criminals, hardened criminals, drug traffickers, also contributes to the drug deaths we see in this country. If people think they can get away with trafficking large amounts of dangerous drugs, you're going to have more drug traffickers. And Democrats have been trying to empty out our prisons and reduce drug trafficking sentences, and in some cases, even legalizing the transit of hard drugs in this country for years.
You know, Senator, I want to close on this. You've got little boys. I've got little boy grandchildren, and I think the president's got little boy great-grandchildren. Can you actually see him running for president? I mean, that was an infirm presentation by an old man last night. I'm trying to be genteel. I don't think he has dementia. I just think he's old. Can you see him going through a campaign and doing debates that actually are real debate? I just don't see it happening.
No, Hugh, I mean, Joe Biden stumbled through the 2020 campaign in his basement. I don't think he could have survived that campaign, probably not even the primary, if he had to be on the campaign trail interacting with voters and reporters on a constant basis, as will be the case next year should he run. It's very hard to imagine Joe Biden making it through a year and a half on the campaign trail, much less six more years in office. He simply does not have, at 80 years old, the mental and physical capacity to continue in the hardest job in the world, and certainly won't at 86 either. And I think most Americans recognize that. And if he's the Democratic nominee, they're going to factor that into their consideration in voting.
Absolutely the case. Senator Tom Cotton, always a pleasure. Remember, those boys are going to have to use oil, so you better get the bumper car ready. I'm pretty sure they're great on the skateboard, but they're going to have to wear crash helmets if they're like my boys when they learn how to drive. There are going to be three wrecks in everybody's life. Most of them occur between 16 and 18, and hopefully they'll be fender benders. Thank you, Senator Cotton.
Look, you did the tough thing during COVID. You paid your people and pulled your business through the pandemic, or really the lockdown. And now, doing the tough thing could qualify you for up to $26,000 per employee at COVIDtaxrelief.org. Government funds are available to reward companies with two or more employees who stayed open during COVID. This is not a loan, and you don't have to pay it back. The program is complicated, but nobody knows more about it than the CPAs and tax experts at COVIDtaxrelief.org. You pay nothing up front. They do all the work and share a percentage of the cash they get you. Businesses of all types, including nonprofits and churches, can qualify, including those who took PPP loans, even if you had increases in sales. You did the tough thing for your employees during COVID. Let COVIDTaxRelief.org help you get up to $26,000 per employee. Visit COVIDTaxRelief.org. That's COVIDTaxRelief.org.
America, I'm Hugh Hewitt. Mike Gallagher is chairman of the new House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party. He's, of course, a congressman from Wisconsin. Good morning, Congressman Gallagher. I want to talk about the State of the Union. Last night, I was with your friend, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and we spent a great deal of time talking about Xi watching the State of the Union and what he must have thought. As you sat there, what did you think of our Chinese adversaries watching the president?
Well, I obviously our energy policy is incoherent, and I'm sure that hasn't been lost on the Chinese Communist Party. And besides fearing their own people, one of the things they fear the most is their lack of energy resources. So it's a massive own goal on our part to have this counterproductive war against domestic energy production. And so the president's remark about we're going to need oil and gas for the future, near future, but then basically, I'm going to put you all on business after that, drew a bunch of derision because it just highlights the incoherence of our approach. And so that's one thing. The other thing I was struck by, I think it was a massive missed opportunity, really, to harness the Chinese spy balloon incident as sort of a Sputnik moment to generate action, to create a bipartisan sense of urgency around countering the threat posed by the Chinese Communist Party. Instead, he seemed to sort of barely devote enough of his speech to the CCP, fail to sort of talk about the nature of the CCP and fail to identify clear ways in which we can better defend our sovereignty. So that was a massive missed opportunity, to say nothing of just the complete misinformation on, Republicans wanting to touch Social Security and Medicare. I mean, that was beyond the pale. That was crazy.
I think he may have underestimated the reaction of the American public because he got applause lines from the Democrats who are just a little unhinged. Let me play the line you referred to, because I've identified it as the takeaway, the meme we will remember. It will become Kevin McCarthy's faith is priceless, by the way. Cut number 26, the president last night.
When I talked to a couple of them, they say, we're afraid you're going to shut down all the oil wells and all the oil refineries anyway. So why should we invest in them? I said, we're going to need oil for at least another decade. And that's going to exceed...
So Kevin McCarthy,
we're going to need it.
Kevin McCarthy says that you can watch it in real time. He kind of says, what did he say? And then he starts to laugh with the rest. Did the Democrats laugh too? We're going to need oil for another 10 years. We're going to need oil for another 1,000 years. What was he thinking?
I wonder if that was in the script or that was a classic Joe Biden ad lib right there, because it obviously made absolutely no sense. Listen, you want the State of the Union to be, a serious, sober affair. Usually there's not a lot of laughter that happens. But I think some Democrats probably couldn't help themselves and were at least suppressing giggles, if nothing else.
Well, the guy is, unfortunately, as I said in the pre-show on the Salem News Channel, he's got a 50-year-old attic that he rummages through in his Washington, D.C. memories, and he comes up with his greatest hits. It's like me humming Dylan or Baez records from my college days. Congressman Gallagher, I did talk to Secretary Pompeo last night, and I talked to Ambassador O'Brien yesterday by phone. Both of them confirmed for me they were never briefed on any Chinese surveillance. Secretary Pompeo expanded in the live audience before the Nixon Library on the fact that this is an enormous array of sensitive material that we did not bring down over Montana. Your colleague Ryan Zinke said they could have brought it down over Petroleum County, Montana, where there are fewer people living than there are members of Congress. It could have been done. What do you think was their thinking? Or were they not thinking at all? Were they paralyzed like so much of the Biden administration has been by rapidly developing stories and a very young staff?
Well, I kind of think, and I have not yet confirmed this, that they thought, were it not for the pesky intervention of the Billings Gazette and some civilians in Montana who were looking at the sky, that they could get away with it. That they could let the balloon traverse the United States, lazily drift over sensitive nuclear facilities, and not do anything about it, and so as to facilitate Secretary of State Anthony Blinken's trip to China. So my working hypothesis is they wanted to suppress it because they wanted this trip to go forward, because they're seeking to adopt a more cooperative approach to China, and some in the administration believe this Chinese Communist Party charm offensive. Now, perhaps there's a more mundane excuse for what happened, which is that we simply didn't detect it in time to do anything about it, or despite having previous incidents, we don't have a well-developed standard operating procedure. But I think the thing most people have been pointing out that's quite right is that if the concern was about debris or civilians on the ground, the time to take it out was when it was over the Aleutian Islands in Alaska. And that makes no sense to me. Finally, I'd say, Hugh, you brought up this issue that Robert has talked about on TV, that Secretary Pompeo has talked about on TV, which is that, you know, early on when this crisis was unfolding, the Biden administration was quick to point out that this has happened multiple times in the Trump administration, as if to downplay it, by the way. That was sort of, it was an anonymous Pentagon official that said this originally. Well, if it happened multiple times in the Trump administration and our highest level civilian leaders, Secretary of State, National Security Advisor, Secretary of Defense, weren't aware of it, weren't briefed on it, that's incredibly problematic. Or if they weren't briefed on it because we didn't piece together that this had happened until after the fact, and we reverse engineered the flight path, that's also problematic because it suggests our ability to detect these things, our early warning system, our NORAD system, is not up to snuff. Finally, and I'm sorry to go on here, Hugh, there seem to be a lot of people downplaying the actual value of this intelligence collection asset, saying it couldn't provide anything you couldn't buy for $10 via commercial imagery. Well, why are we so sanguine about that? Why are we confident that the PLA wouldn't weaponize something like this in the future? There was a Financial Times report that suggested in 2018 there was a balloon identical to this from which they were deploying missiles, and that the PLA rocket force has already incorporated the use of these high altitude balloons into their doctrine as intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance assets that will cue targets that they can action kinetically forward. So it's it was a ton of inconsistencies coming out of the Biden administration. And ultimately, I think it just should hammer home the point to the American people that when it comes to the Chinese Communist Party, this isn't an over there problem. It's a right here problem.
I want to emphasize the administration has adopted the time-honored approach of trial lawyers. It's not my dog. It didn't bite you. Besides, you kicked him first. And they've added what dog? They've added, you know, there is no dog. And in fact, what Secretary Pompeo said last night, there is immeasurable value to signals intelligence that are not satellite images. Satellite images are static pictures. Signals intelligence is a sweep of electronic communications and all other kind of activity on the ground in real time. Can you imagine what this would look like should, God forbid, there be a conflict with China? Imagine if Japan had transited Pearl Harbor in 1940, leisurely taking pictures of where our battleships and carriers were. We would have noticed that, right? I just can't believe that the president did not bring it up last night. Were you expecting him to at least mention it?
I was. And I said on TV earlier in the day that I really think he had an opportunity to use it as a wake-up call in terms of the adversary that we're facing, as well as point to perhaps the growing bipartisan call for getting more aggressive on countering the Chinese Communist Party in the House of Representatives. But he did not do that. You know, Hugh, assume for a second that this thing, let's just say it had absolutely no intelligence collection value. Let's just say it was pretty useless. Well, it's still a massive middle finger to the United States. I mean, it still seems like a message deliberately timed to coincide with Secretary Blinken's visit to us that, hey, look what we can get away with and you'll do nothing about it. And this is right in their playbook, right? I remember when Blinken went to meet with Chinese officials in Alaska and they embarrassed one.
Yeah.
Go back to Obama at the G20 in Hangzhou where they refused to get the staircase on Air Force One ride, and they sent Chinese fishing vessels to contest the Scarborough Shoal simultaneously with his visit. Go back all the way to 1958 when Mao humiliates Khrushchev. When the Soviet Union is at the height of their power post-Sputnik, Khrushchev comes to China and Mao asks him if he wants to go swimming, knowing full well that Khrushchev can't swim and Mao's a very good swimmer. He puts him in un-air-conditioned rooms. I mean, this is right in the Chinese Communist Party playbook. I guess it's possible that it was unintentional, it was rogue.
We don't have to cover that base.
But it just seems like
Can you imagine what the after-action discussion with Xi Jinping, and Pompeo named last night a couple of his senior advisors, he called him dead-eyed. The scariest guy he's met is Xi Jinping because he's got no emotion, completely blank, totalitarian look. Can you imagine the conference room debrief of our reaction and what they must be saying about us? And then they add in the State of the Union last night when they, like us, were expecting the president to say something. It's like not Ike not saying anything after Sputnik, or Kennedy not saying anything after the Cuban Missile Crisis, or FDR not noticing. It's not American lives weren't lost, but it's an amazing moment in American foreign policy. And the president was silent before the Congress 2 days later.
And now, because the past is prologue, we also have a growing missile gap with China. We have an ICBM gap, an intercontinental ballistic missile gap. They've made incredible advances in their nuclear technology. So across the board, they're on the march. And so I really was expecting more out of the president. And, you know, this they seem trapped in this framework of, well, we have to cooperate with the Chinese Communist Party when it comes to climate change. I mean, has the CCP shown any interest in doing right by the environment or the climate? I mean, do these people honestly think Xi Jinping cares about any commitment made at COP27? It's a profoundly utopian and naive view of the world that misunderstands Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party priorities.
Yeah, Chairman, I want to close with this. Much of the American domestic left would rather fight with Republicans because Republicans are not dangerous. They don't even use nasty words most of the time, much less push back. They might go to a school board meeting and get mad if their kids have been assaulted at school. But it's pretty easy to attack Republicans on the national news media. They don't want to get into a fight with the Chinese. I believe appeasers are going to appease because they're afraid. What do you think?
Well, there is this fear of provocation that you see playing out in Ukraine that accounts for a lot of our half measures. It's every step we take is dangerous because it's too provocative. I would argue that weakness is provocative. Weakness is what invites war. And so what we need to do in Taiwan is put in place a posture of deterrence by denial that forces Xi Jinping to think twice. This, as I've said on your program before, is the paradox of deterrence. In order to prevent war, you need to convince the adversary that you're willing to go to war.
Have you got a hearing set up yet for the new select committee? Is there staff on board? Is it finally, you got the members? Are you getting organized?
We do. I'm about to leave this interview and go right into our first all-member meeting. And then when I am ready to announce our first hearing, which is tentatively scheduled, as well as our first few events, you'll be the first to know, Hugh. But we are going to be ready to sprint after we get our rules passed. And that's going to happen all in the coming weeks.
Look, I don't like to beat up on Disney, but I do. Yesterday, they announced they're cutting out a portion of the South Park that mentioned Chinese labor camps so it can be shown in Beijing. You might want to bring that up with your Democrat friends this morning. Please extend them an offer to come on the show as well, Mr. Chairman. No Wisconsin bashing this morning was unnecessary. Chairman Mike Gallagher, thank you for joining me. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hey, America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live in Studio West. The most talked about line of last night's derision-filled State of the Union address is the president's announcement to Jim Garrity and me that we're going to need oil in 10 years. You're going to have to teach your kids how to drive, Jim. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I can't wait. I'm so excited. You know, Hugh, you know what jumps out at me is that would have been a good moment for sarcastic applause. You know, oh, you noticed we're going to need oil and gas for a while. Good job, Mr. President. Hey, thanks. Well, thank you for waking up and smelling the coffee.
Yeah.
We know it's past your bedtime. Thank you for acknowledging reality. Big move. All right. Thank you, Captain Obvious. You know, like that's a better response. I didn't love the sneering, snickering, you know. All that kind of stuff. But
you know, it is my rule of thumb, Jim, that presidents get what they give in States of the Union and addresses. So when George W. Bush goes up to announce the axis of evil, it's very somber. When Obama comes in and accuses Citizens United of being wrong, Alito speaks out. And last night, there was just so much absurdity in that speech. He got a lot of derision. And I don't know that it was unexpected. He may have wanted it, actually.
Oh, I strongly suspect that was the case. Look, you know, there's a Republican House. Biden knows he's not going to get the legislative agenda through that he got through for the past 2 years. This is the prelude to the 2024 campaign. A lot of my colleagues pointed out how Trumpy it was in certain ways, emphasizing blue-collar workers, emphasizing people left behind, emphasizing jobs where you don't need a high school degree. The idea that he was not going to get Hillary Clinton, or at least that's the game plan for the next 2 years. I also heard a lot of Bill Clinton, 1996, right? This big, small ball, There is no problem so small in this country that the federal government cannot leap into action to take it. Are you annoyed by those resort fees at hotels? The federal government's going to jump into action. Are you annoyed by that fee on, you know, at some point it's going to turn into, and why is popcorn so expensive at the movie theater? You know,
I'm going to put on there, why is Jim Garrity not wearing a tie on the Hugh Hewitt Show on the Salem News Channel? You know, Jim, I have a paperweight. I think it's unique among broadcasters.
I've got a newsletter to write.
I've got a paperweight on my desk. Can you see this? This is I picked it up in a London flea market 30 years ago. It's Gladstone. They used to make Gladstone Grand Old Man paperweight. I don't think we're ever going to, he was 80 years old when he finished up. I don't think we're ever going to compare Biden to Gladstone. So let's go to the elephant in the room. Just an example of the president's inability to talk, we're going to play cut number 27.
Make no mistake. If you try anything to raise the cost of presidential jobs, I will veto it.
Okay, so if it raises the cost of presidential jobs, I will veto it. What'd you think, Jim?
Actually, this has become more and more common in Biden's speeches. And when everybody says, he's fine. Look, we saw this guy for 8 years as vice president of the United States. We remember him for we know this isn't the same guy. We know that age is affecting him in a way that can no longer be ignored. Most of the time, we can figure out when he kind of mumbles what he's referring to and the importance of jobs and stuff. You know, okay, fine. Look, we know that even if Biden wins another term, the odds of him finishing at age 85, 86 as president are not terribly likely. I do think that's, by the way, driving some of this panic about Kamala Harris, this recognition that, okay, Biden wants to run again. But the idea of him serving another 6 years or so, a little bit less than 6 years, in the Oval, behind the Resolute desk in the Oval Office is just very hard to see. We know we can look at his schedule. We know he spends every weekend back in Delaware. We know he rarely does events before 10. We know he rarely does events later than 2 in the afternoon. He's got about 4 or 5 good hours a day, it appears. And
yeah, he's keeping journalist hours. He's keeping journalist hours now. Jim, let me ask you a little bit about last night, looking forward. I spent last night with Mike Pompeo. I did a book interview at the Nixon Foundation with about 800 people. While the book has done exceptionally well for a Trump memoir. Of the four-year books, Kellyanne Conway, Jared Kushner, Mike Pence, and Mike Pompeo. Pompeo's has sold by far.
Book.
That
you
book.
This book that I've yes.
It's a fabulous read. But yes. You know, they start debates on the Republican side, and I expect Pompeo to run, though he wouldn't confirm it last night. And I'm Switzerland. Whoever gets the nomination, I'll support. I just want him to answer serious questions. They'll start in July. I don't think the president is going to do the debates because, A, the Republican Party has sunk the debate commission. That's done. I think they're going to use that as an excuse to keep the president off of a debate stage because he can't get through a 90-minute debate, Jim.
It's conceivable that you'll see something like that. I would point out that the debates in 2020 didn't go as badly for Biden as they hoped. One, because there were two instead of three because Trump caught COVID. Secondly, because the first debate, Trump was shouting over him the whole time. And
Trump
I think
had
the second
COVID.
Debate went better.
Yeah. Trump had debate, COVID.
Trump, the second debate went better when actually Trump wasn't shouting over him the whole time, because that's when Biden said, yes, we're going to eliminate gas and oil. Biden's mouth got himself in trouble more often when he had a chance to speak, which kind of you wonder about what the philosophy was going into that first one. Add another 4 years onto Biden. Yeah, these debates could be really rough for Biden, but, you know, Biden is, you know, yes, you say, okay, because of the lack of COVID, Biden won't be able to do the usual, you know, basement campaign or something like that. Well, in 2022 midterms, Biden certainly didn't do any big rallies like Obama did.
Well, he went to Maryland. He campaigned in Maryland, Jim.
Yeah, you know, he went to very safe places, and when it came up to help Fetterman, he did generally closed door fundraiser events and short taped appearances and stuff like that. So, like, I'd like to believe that this is going to hurt him, but we've seen two straight election cycles, Hugh, where this didn't really hurt Biden.
Well, I don't know if it's going to hurt him.
Biden being incapable.
I just don't think he's going to be out there. Now, I'm curious in the morning jolt. Give us a little preview of your National Review Daily newsletter. I'm sure it's going to be the State of the Union. By the way, which justices were there last night? I had to listen to it. I didn't get to see it because I was going to the library with Pompeo. Which of the nine showed up? Because my Washington Post column today is about the Supreme Court. I'm just wondering who came last night.
Kavanaugh, Coney Barrett, and most of the left. Kagan, I saw. Roberts was there.
Oh, the K.
I don't know if I remember seeing Sotomayor. So it looked like it looked probably like five or six of them.
Yeah, the chief showed up. That's what I wanted to know, because the Washington Post column today. So today, the morning jolt will be about last night. What's the lead? You must have written the lead already.
Yeah. First one is about Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, and the discussion of the, I went back and I looked at that when Byron Donald appeared on Joy Reid's program, and Joy Reid just, he said, Social Security will be insolvent by 2035. That is straight from the trustees. This is not some crazy theory. This is not some right-wing think tank projection. And Reid just acted like a malfunctioning robot and kept saying, that is not true. That is not accurate. That, and she said it like 12 times in a row. That is not accurate. She didn't have a counter argument. She didn't have other figures. She just kept asserting that it was not true. Newsflash, it is true. The second thing I'm going to talk about, and that I think is kind of significant, is Hugh, if you went to bed early, and by early, I mean like 10, 10:15, would you know that there's a Russian invasion of Ukraine?
No.
You could have missed the vague allusion to the Chinese spy balloon, right?
Oh, I didn't catch any allusion to the Chinese. Mike Pompeo and I were talking about the fact that this is a major national security breach of extraordinary importance that did not happen under Trump, and no one is talking about it seriously.
It was quick and it was vague. It was one line. As we made clear last week, if China threatens our sovereignty, we will act to protect our country, and we did. That was it. No word balloon, no details, no updates, nothing like that. And so one of the things that I'm sure the focus groups were more excited about hotel resort fees than they were about the biggest land war in Europe since World War II and Chinese efforts to undermine U.S. national security. But just because, that's what the focus groups like, doesn't mean the president isn't kind of obligated to talk about this.
Jim, I'm noticing Tom, on that point, I didn't know he'd done that. Mm-hmm. I went to the Republican winter meeting last week and I paid a hotel resort fee and I complain about it. But I'm wealthy enough to complain about hotel resort fees. How many people do you think even know what he's talking about?
Oh, I mean, like some do. But this, like I said, this is Bill Clinton fluffing the pillows government. This is. Every little thing that ATM fees, aren't they the worst? This
fluffing the pillow. I'm stealing that. Part of the cost of being a regular on the Hugh Hewitt show is I steal your stuff like a Catskill shameless comedian. Bill Clinton fluffing the pillow speech, is that in the morning jolt?
This is the most innocent reference to Bill Clinton and fluffing you've ever heard, Hugh.
I will be reading my morning jolt as soon as the show is over. Jim Garrity on Twitter at National Review and in the Washington Post. Thank you, Jim. I'll be right back fluffing some more pillows here on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.